This is the Beersmith Homebrewing Show, episode number 2, recorded 25 October 2010. If you want to learn more about making great beer at home, visit beersmith.com to get started today. I'm your host, Brad Smith from beersmith.com. I got a great interview today with the authors of the beer blog Hop Talk, and I also have Alan Wright, who's hosting the first ever beer blogging conference next week. But first, I want to say a few words about my new book, which is called Homebrewing with Beersmith. It's releasing this week. It's a compilation of over 70 of my best articles from the last 2.5 years of the Beersmith blog. And that's going to be available from my website at beersmith.com, as well as on the Amazon store and on the Kindle. So that releases this Wednesday, 27 October 2010. And without further ado, here's this week's interview. We've got a distinguished panel here on the Beersmith Show today. First, I've got Al Everett from hoptalk.com. Say hi, Al.
Hi, everybody.
Next, I have Ron Namath, also from hoptalk.com, the other half of the team.
Hello, everyone.
And finally, I have Alan Wright from beerbloggersconference.com.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And what those folks all have in common is that they're all beer bloggers or related to the beer blogging industry. Now, Ron and Al, you have one of the most popular blogs on the internet right now with hoptalk.com. How did you get started in beer blogging?
That's a long story. Well, Ron and I have been beer fans for a long time. And as you know, you get a couple, three people together in a room who like beer and like talking about beer. And the beer starts flowing, and there's more talking, and there's more more animated talking, and just talking. And he and I could just sit, and we could talk about beer. We could cuss and discuss for just ages. And then, you know, I'd been reading a lot of blogs then, and like, wow, I could, like, write stuff. I could get some of this stuff out of me and out into the world and share it with people, whether they wanted it or not. So called Ron up one day and said, hey, you want to blog with me? And he said, okay.
So Ron, when did you guys start?
Oh, it was, this was 2006, I believe, summer of 2006, Al, was that right?
Yes, July. And, 2006.
I know it was July, and I was right. It's one of those things. I like to write myself, and, you know, when you want to write about something and you have nothing to write it towards, you know, you're not doing it. So it was an outlet to get some stuff on paper, to be a little creative, and it just kind of fit. And we kind of approached it as, okay, let's just see what happens. And that's exactly how it started.
So Alan, you're in the middle of organizing the first ever beer blogging conference. Can you tell us a little bit about that event?
Yeah, that's a conference that's happening next month, actually, November 5 through 7. So it's a 3-day conference, and it's taking place in Boulder, Colorado. And we've got, I think, 91 people signed up right now. So that's beer bloggers coming in from all across the country. And even we have a guy coming in from London. So it should be very successful.
I was looking over your website, and I noticed you had a listing of all the beer bloggers on the web. How many beer bloggers do you think there are currently?
Yeah, we have the complete list of beer blogs, we call it, on our website. And we divide bloggers into what we call citizen bloggers, people who are blogging on their own account, and versus those who are blogging for a business or a brewery or something like that. Right now in North America, we have a list of 576 people who are blogging as citizen bloggers. And I guarantee you that is going well over 600. We just don't have the list complete yet, but people email us every week saying, please add us to your list. If you added in companies and breweries and those blogging overseas, they're probably 800 to 1,000 beer bloggers out there on the internet.
Wow. So how'd you get started actually trying to form the first ever beer blogging conference? How'd that get started?
Well, it comes about because the company that I own and run is called Zephyr Adventures, and we run we are an adventure travel company, and I've been doing this for 13 years, but in the last five or so, we've been running active tours in wine areas around the world. As part of that, I got the idea that there should be a wine bloggers conference, and so 3 years ago, we created the first one. That is now 3 years in, and we just had 305 people show up in Walla Walla, Washington a couple of months ago, and it's extremely successful. The bloggers have a great time. They learn a lot. The connection with the industry is really good. And we thought there should definitely be this same opportunity for beer bloggers. And so we actually only created and announced this conference 5 months ago. And so it's been kind of a whirlwind, and there hasn't been a lot of lead time for bloggers. It's not that easy to take 3 days out of your schedule and budget for this. So the fact that we're at 90 people for this one is good, and I expect that to go up quite a bit when we run the 2011 version.
So Ron and Ale, I've seen some pretty good traffic coming into the Beersmith blog now. What kind of numbers are you seeing coming into your Hop Talk blog?
Last time I checked the RSS subscribers, we were just a skosh over 8,000 subscribers. I'd have to double check my web analytics numbers, but we're getting a couple thousand unique visitors a month or so. Yeah, it's really been interesting to see the, just as time has gone on, just the slope of the graph just moving up and up and up. We had a little bit of a coup about a year ago. Google has their reader product, and they put together bundles of blogs on specific topics as suggestions for people. And we wound up in the beer bundle. So we were one of 10 blogs in there on a very, very popular product, and it has skyrocketed since then.
That's fantastic.
It's also interesting to see sometimes the one or two articles that gets reposted somewhere that all of a sudden there's a spike and gravitation towards one article, and it's usually something that we just put up because maybe it was a humor thing or one of those funny commercial things. But some of those other whether it's Dig or those type of sites who just kind of repost your spot and link gains a ton of traffic all at once.
Yeah, I was pretty amazed. I wrote a little article about beer brewing quotes, and last spring it gained over 20,000 visits in a day.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was shocking. That one little post, just a collection of beer brewing quotes, probably had 70 or 80,000 visits. It was amazing to me. Al, back in 2009, you finished a pretty incredible feat. I think you were the first one to actually finish it. You drank a beer every day for 365 days.
Yes.
And then you blogged about it on your blog.
Yes.
Can you share a little bit about that experience for us?
I will never do that again.
No.
Cheers.
But it was both a lot of fun, kind of interesting, and it was hard. I was inspired by my wife, actually. We moved down here to Maryland in 2005 after having lived my entire life in New Jersey. And as part of her way of learning more about the town that we moved to, she did a photo project where she went around town and took a picture of something different every day. And to make it more challenging for herself, she used black and white film, and she limited herself to actual film, and she limited herself to one shot. So good, bad, or ugly, whatever it was, that was her shot for that day. So that's what inspired me to try this. For the first month, it was great. It's just like, wow. And I'd get home from work and the wife's like, oh, what are you going to drink today? And it's like, oh, I don't know. I got to find, I got some things lined up and blah, blah, blah. About 2 months in, I'm like, oh man, do I really have to drink a beer today and write about it?
Yeah. I think most of us would like to drink a beer every day, right?
Well, if you averaged it out, it probably would work out to having one a day, but it became, oh no, I have to do it and I have to write about it, which means I have to do the research. And And fortunately, I found a really good beer store down here, so I was able to get 365 different beers. I think I had the entire lineup of Flying Dog. I think I had the entire lineup of Great Divide. I think I had the entire lineup of Sierra Nevada. I think I had the entire lineup of Saranac. I even had a macro beer week where I drank Bud and Miller and Miller Genuine Draft and Coors Light. And I call it my dark period. But, and I tell you what, I gained a bit of weight. So yeah, I'm not going to do that again. I finally got it all off. Finally.
So how many months did it take you before you actually got sick of doing it?
You know, I think September was the really time that I considered giving up, but then I was so close to the end. And then by, you know, by October, I'm like, all right, I'm on the home stretch. So I just got to finish it.
Well, I was doing this. I was, of course, cheering him on with my own blog post and secretly in the background, sending him email, telling him he's crazy for doing it. But Al, didn't you done some research too about other people who have attempted the 365 different beers a day, a year, and no one has completed it. So you were at least the first.
I found two and found a lot of aborted attempts. And then the other really disheartening thing was in September, I think it was Jay Brooks, Brooks and Beer Bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
No. He was quoting Joe Sixpack out of Philly. Some guy had done over 10,000 different beers, different one every day.
10,000?
10,000. Yes. He'd been doing it for, golly, I don't even know how many years.
Oh my God.
It might have been more than that. All I know, it was a huge number, and I knew that I was never going to attempt that and live.
So Ron, what are some of your favorite homebrewing posts from the blog? I know you don't homebrew a lot anymore, but you do occasionally write about homebrewing on the Hop Talk.
Well, you know, as far as homebrewing oriented goes, since I haven't been homebrewing and you know, I was blogging after I had, I don't want to say quit homebrewing because I've never quit, and I know I'm going to go back to it again. I say it's on my bucket list. I did a bunch of articles that kind of just took some of the basics, I think, that homebrewers get stuck on, like how to read the hydrometer, you know, how are you calculating alcohol percentage, and I like to take close up photos of, you know, what we're actually talking about, because, you know, you search on the internet, and I was looking for, you know, images on how to read a hydrometer myself, and you can't find anything. So I took it upon myself to say, okay, this is how you judge, you know, color in a beer, and this is how you read this and that sort of thing. So those were kind of fun. It was educational to myself at the time too, because I'm like, I wonder how you do that. And sometimes it came in as a question to us at Hop Talk, and I'm like, well, I know the answer to that. And then I question myself, do I really know the answer to that? So maybe I better go look that up. And hey, this is a whole article, and I'll write that up. And those were kind of fun to do.
Ron and Al, I noticed you started posting comic strips recently on the blog. How did you get into that, and who's doing the comic strips for you?
It's this guy, Matt, who lives out in California, in the San Jose area. He wrote to me a couple months ago and said, hey, you know, I'm in the same boat as you guys. I'm, you know, in my, you know, 30, 40s. I'm married. I got a kid on the way. You know, I came late to the craft beer scene. You know, I'm really appreciating it. I've got this comic. You know, would you like to put it up on your site? So we just jumped at the chance. Yeah, love that. So he's been doing stuff for us every week now. We're the official headquarters of Beef and Beer, which is the story of Maddie, who is the semi-biographical version of Matt, who draws the comic, and Burger, who is a bull. They both work at a brewery. Burger, of course, has four stomachs, so he can drink everybody under the table, including me, in a recent strip.
We actually recently got to be, I was a comic, and Al was a comic. So that's a new a new achievement in life.
So you're now comic book characters?
I'm a comic book character, yeah. I'm not a superhero, but...
Your mother must be so proud.
Yeah. Oh, and I, you know, I did. I sent her a link to it.
Alan, I've seen more bloggers moved into audio and video. What's driving that train?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the blogging world is probably following the rest of the world too. Did any of you see there was a study that came out recently? It said that people get their news from, number one, TV, which is obviously video. Number two was tied with radio and internet, which is audio, at least on the radio side, and then who knows what on the internet side. And then number four was newspapers, which probably used to be number one at one point. So clearly the whole society is moving towards the idea that they want to have multiple things happening at once. They want to hear what's going on. They want to see what's going on. And I think it gives people a greater sense of interaction too. You can actually do something like this in audio or video, and people can see us or hear us while we're explaining what we think rather than just reading it on the page.
Yeah, it's actually incredible how far the technology has come. I mean, we're sitting in different parts of the country, all four of us, and we're talking via Skype, and it's almost like we're in the same room. It's just incredible.
And it's free.
Yeah, and it's free too.
isn't some of this audio and video stuff, I mean, isn't it a large part of it driven by the fact that, you know, everything's much cheaper now? I mean, to do this 10 years ago would have cost you tens of thousands of dollars, you know, and now I got, you know, I borrowed a webcam, I got a $30 headset, you know, and, you know, here I am doing a podcast. I mean, 10 years ago, it would have been really cost prohibitive.
Yeah, I think that that's true for blogging too, isn't it? Because what is blogging other than they call it citizen journalism, and Alan, Ron, people like you guys are at home, and you don't have to have a publishing mechanism anymore, right? In the old days, it was you had to have the funds to create a printing press to be able to get your views out there. And now anybody can sign up for free to go online and create their own blog and get their wisdom out there on the internet. And now it depends on whether you have something that's worthwhile saying.
Yeah, Ron and Al and I are reaching audiences now of 10,000 people or more, and we're doing that at virtually no cost over the internet. And in the past, you would have had to have a radio show or a television show or certainly a magazine to reach that kind of an audience. That's pretty incredible what you can do today over the internet, basically for free. And I'm in the middle of publishing my own homebrewing book, and it's pretty incredible. I did that all self-publishing and sent them the draft. And literally in less than a week, I had the final printed book bound in paperback and everything shipped to my house. It's just amazing how much it's changed in the last 10 years since the last time I wrote a book, actually.
Oh, sure. And you're not committed to a print run of 10,000.
No, there's no inventory at all. They actually print each book as people order them. It's pretty amazing. Now, Al, I've noticed you've started Twittering quite a bit. What kind of reaction have you gotten to your tweets?
It's a different sort of engagement. Obviously a large number of the tweets are just, links to articles that have gone live on Hop Talk, to bring people in. But others, it's just, I'm out and about, and I'm making a little observation here that it's not really worth, a couple hundred words in a blog post, but, within 140 characters, I can make a wry observation. Reaction's been, I would say, mixed. A little bit more engagement with Twitter, I think, more just because of the immediacy of it.
Now, Alan, you're more in touch with the overall social media world and blogging world. What kind of results are you seeing from Twitter and Facebook and things like LinkedIn?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, a lot of your listening audience is probably not understanding what Twitter really does. But it can be effective. It can be effective if used properly. We have a beer blogger called The Beer Wench. Ashley is her name. And she does our Twitter account. And she took us from zero followers to 1,000 in 5 months. And now when we post something on our beerbloggersconference.org website, people aren't coming to that site every day. They shouldn't. They they wouldn't have a job or a family, right? But they do go to their Twitter account to see what's going on. And if they're following us and following the BBC 10 stream, they'll see that we've posted something new or there's new news. And so actually, when I want to get the word out about something, then I ask Ashley to post about it on Twitter, and it has a greater effect a lot of times than posting on our blog.
So you're doing the same kind of things with Facebook and the other social media sites as well?
Yeah, we have Facebook too. You know, Facebook is fantastic because the whole secret to Facebook is that when somebody does something on Facebook, all of their friends see it, right? So it's viral by nature. If somebody joins the Beer Blogger Conference page or comments on it, then not only is that person doing something, but everybody else who's their friend sees that they're doing it. And so it's a viral form of communication automatically. You know, my feeling on social media and blogging, I would include in that in general, is that it's basically about passion and community. You have to have both, really, to make the thing work. You've got to be passionate about whatever subject it is, and you have to be willing to engage in the community. So you've got, you know, Al, did you ever see the movie Super Size Me?
I did.
Great movie, right? About the guy that eats at McDonald's once a day for a month.
Yeah, I swore off McDonald's for 2 whole weeks because of that.
Excellent, excellent.
I saw that movie too. It was pretty incredible.
Well, that, see, Al's story about the beer a year reminded me a lot of Morgan Spurlock in that movie. And both of them are the same because both are about having passion for your subject. And if you don't have that passion for your subject, it doesn't matter what sort of community you try and enter, you're just not going to be that interesting. So you have to have the passion, in this case, for home brewing or for craft beer or for whatever it is, and then get out and interact with other people who are interested in that same subject.
Now, Ron and Al, I know you that you've been on and off home brewing over the last couple of years. What's bringing you back towards home brewing again? I know, for example, Al started brewing again.
He's enjoying a homebrew right now.
Yes, I am. I am actually enjoying a homebrew. Well, I think part of the answer to that question is my wife, who asked me about my homebrewing equipment, which was in storage. And, I think her words were, use it or get rid of it. So, not wanting to get rid of it, I decided to use it. Found a homebrew club down here. Took a couple of classes, and just, I don't know. It's just fun to do. It's not, you know, overly technical, but it can be very interesting. You can do a lot of different techniques. You can make it as difficult as you want. And at the end you get beer. I mean, so how can that be wrong?
Ron, you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I'm on the, I'm going to call it again, the hiatus that I'm on for brewing. And that was when I would do a brew. I mean, I would usually take a Saturday, and it was kind of an all day event because, I mean, I was trying to be meticulous about getting everything clean. And then, you know, by the time everything's been boiled, and I got to the point where I was kegging and, doing all grain, brews, you know, it would take the greater part of a day to do, but now it was pretty much as you had kids and then suddenly you have other commitments, you know, I do coach soccer and those kinds of things. And, you know, these are other commitments that kind of trumpet for now. I know I'll definitely get back into it because it's just a sit back and relax kind of hobby. Like Al said, you can make it as technical as you want. You can worry about it as much as you want. And in the end you get good beer. In the meantime, one reason that I've been able to take a hiatus, I'd give credit to the American craft brewers that are out there. There's just so many choices now. I can go to the store. I can go to the grocery store and I can buy Stone and Rogue and Alma Gang, and it's all just right there, right in the middle of, you know, on the end cap. So it's made it easy for me to be able to enjoy beer and go, okay, I'm okay not brewing for now. There'll be a time in my life when it'll come back in.
So, Ron, while we're on the topic of craft brew, which microbrew is your favorite?
Oh, there are so many. yeah, there's so many. I do tend to be a bit of a hophead. So does Al. So some of my, I love just about everything from Stone. I do love Stone's IPA. It is a favorite. Victory is another brewery that I love just about everything that they make. Rogue makes, well, they make a, boy, what a line of beers that come out of there. Those are all fantastic. I could pick out, it's called Yellow Snow IPA.
Yeah, Yellow Snow sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's actually delicious. goodness, there's some from Brooklyn Brewery that are also a favorite. You know, Brooklyn's Oktoberfest has been fair. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Oktoberfest style, but, you know, the Brooklyn, you know, stands out, and so do some of the other ones. My wife has some favorites. She's a big fan of their brown ale, and their chocolate stout is also fantastic. So, yeah, I mean,
I'm a huge,
you can go on and
fan.
On. Yeah, I love all styles. I could get picky about things being overdone, and even as a hophead, I can say that, you know, there is such thing as too much hops as well. But more so it comes into play when you're talking about like fruit beers. You know, I like to see a hint of the fruit, not like to be drinking a bucket of strawberries or something like that. So,
now, Alan, do you have a favorite microbrew?
Oh gosh, there's no way I could say I have a favorite microbrew. You know, in Boulder alone, we have 11 different craft brewers. And in Colorado, there's something like 102. And my business is based up in Montana, which has another 20 breweries. So, I mean, I really think the secret is to not have a favorite beer and to keep trying all these new ones, because there are thousands of them that come out every year.
Yeah, I left ale for last. Now, ale, out of 365 brews, which is your favorite microbrew?
Oh, I couldn't possibly pick a winner. And I think I said as much back in January. There are some that I, you know, will return to again and again. But, you know, it depends on my mood. It depends on the weather. It depends on what I'm eating. One of the things, Ron was down for a visit this past weekend, our annual get together. And we had, what was that stout that we had? Industrial.
Out of Bounds stout.
The Out of Bounds stout. Yes. Oh, Avery, that was delicious.
Avery's but Out of Bounds. Yeah.
I can't call it a favorite because, yeah, well, you know, maybe tomorrow I want a Brooklyn black chocolate stout, or maybe I want to have dessert and have a Young's luxury chocolate stout, or so I can't pick a favorite. I have some favorite breweries, but I can't pick one favorite beer. You asked me to pick 20. I might be able to.
So you guys have a substantial audience of homebrewers and beer lovers. What kind of reaction have you received over the years to your articles from your fans?
Most of our feedback is one of two types. One is, a thank you or a commiseration on some sort of lifestyle post. You know, talking about the circumstances of where we're having beer or the friends we were having it with and why, not even specifically about the beer itself. And we get a lot of feedback from folks who, you know, really that resonates with, and they had the same sort of experiences, and they're glad to see that other people do. And the other half of really big feedback we get is from people who think we're someone we're not. We are asked, I've been asked by three or four different people of where they can get a particular kind of brewery's beer because they think we're that brewery. Or right.
The shelf life of that pumpkin ale you just spoke of. I don't know.
Yeah. Or for a long time, shortly after Beer Advocate magazine came out, you know, I put up an article or two. I think I put up an article when I heard about it, and then another one when I got my first issue. And then I must have got five or six different private feedback emails asking, hey, you know, how can I, you know, how much is a subscription? And, you know, hey, I really like that article you guys did. And like, okay, we're not We're not the Ahlstrom brothers. I don't
know. I've had people call the house because they're looking for beer brewing ingredients. Somehow they track down my phone number and call the house looking for malt or hops. And it's kind of funny.
We had that too. I was given an offer of like bulk order of hops at a great price. I'm like, I haven't even been home brewing, but I don't know what to do with. I don't know what it comes in, bushels.
I don't know what you're going to do with a metric ton of hops, Ron.
Right.
A lot of brewing.
The other problem I run into is I sell Barley Crushers, which is a malt mill, and I get calls from people all the time trying to get wholesale orders and place wholesale orders for the Barley Crushers. And of course, I don't sell them directly. So, Ron and Al, could you share a few tips for people that are just starting out homebrewing?
My best tip is to find and join a homebrew club.
Yeah, that's good advice.
One of the first things when I moved down here was to join the homebrew club, which my wife, bless her heart, found for me. And you will not find a friendlier, more knowledgeable bunch of people, and they all are going to share your passion for brewing beer and good beer. And none of the folks I've ever run into, you know, there's some guys who got some crazy, crazy setups with huge kettles, and they're doing all grain, and they're growing their own hops. And, you know, I come in there with my little, you know, my little extract brew and my hop pellets, you know, and they don't look down on me. They give it, you know, they taste it and give their thoughts and, you know, constructive criticism. But it's just, it's just great.
It's interesting to me that a number of extract brewers over the years have won major awards. And in fact, in general, they do just as well as all grain brewers in competition.
Yeah, we had a little problem a couple of years ago. One of the contests for the internal foam cup, they call it, Frederick's Original Ale Makers. That's the name of the club. The grand prize was to brew your beer at one of the local breweries. And they were afraid that somebody with an extract recipe was going to win, and the brewers were all kind of the professional brewers were a little upset about that, but I don't think the home brewers really were.
How about you, Rod?
That's funny. Well, I would say, you know, don't be afraid of working towards all grain. It's really not that hard, and it's just it is a little bit more satisfying to say you've made it all from that grain. That's not so much a tip. If I was going to give a tip when you get to all grain, it would be resist over sparging. I don't know if you guys, when you're doing all grains, I get this urge to, the more I sparge, the more beer I'll get out of it. But then it's bad, right?
Yeah. You get astringents and all kinds of things
right,
into it.
Tannins and that astringent taste. And yeah, I've done that. And
I generally tell people to go slow and they're sparging their work.
Oh yeah.
Turns out a lot better.
Yep. But right. So sparge slowly, you know, don't over sparge but don't be afraid to go to the all grain. It's a lot of fun.
You know, Alan, I checked my stats from my blog the other day and I've seen my traffic grow about 50% in the last year. Where do you see beer blogging really going in the future?
Well, I don't see everybody getting that. I think that, you know, there's a lot of diversity out there in beer blogs, and there is a long tail of the internet, as they say in beer blogs. So there are a lot of people out there who are blogging for fun and they're not getting a lot of hits, and other life things are going to get in the way and they're going to give it up. So I see a lot of turnover actually in the beer blogging world.
Yeah, which is true of blogging in general, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And not a bad thing, right? Because I think one of the things I would encourage is people out there who are home brewing and or just trying craft beers and they're into it, blogging is a great way to record your thoughts and then you become more into it. And I always find if you've got to write something down, you think about it a lot more clearly than you do if you're just kind of hanging out at the bar and sipping the beer. So I think it's a great thing that there is the turnover and people are coming in, but there is an opportunity in the beer world for someone to step up and become a beer blogger with a serious influence and a lot of followers. You know, they're in the wine world, in the food world, they both have established critics and magazines. Robert Parker, right? In the wine world.
Gary Vaynerchuk.
Gary Vaynerchuk has taken on that role in the online version of wine criticism, and we're waiting for that person to come through in the beer world. So somebody out in your show might be that person.
Well, hopefully it'll be Al or Ron, because I'm not really that experienced of a beer critic. You know, but Al's got that 365 beers behind him, right?
I wouldn't call myself a critic. I'm an aficionado.
Yeah, well, I'm more of a home brewer, but I'd like to thank you all for being on the show today. I'd like to go around the horn one more time and give each of you a chance to say something. I'm going to start. We've actually got sort of a Hollywood Squares here. I've got four people on video. I'm going to start in the top right with Al.
Just thanks for having me on. It was great. I'm glad we're ending because my beer's empty.
Boy, can't let that happen. How about you, Alan?
Yeah, it was a pleasure talking. I just wanted to close by saying that that favorite, I think it was a stout beer you guys were mentioning from Avery. That brewing company is 2 miles from my home here in Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, I'm jealous.
They have a nice tap room. So if any of the three of you come out to Boulder, alert me in advance and I'll take you out there.
Well, I've been thinking about going out for one of the big conferences next year. We'll see how that goes.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And Ron, how about you?
Thank you for having us. And, you know, I do encourage people to go ahead and visit hoptalk.com. And, you know, our slogan was, you know, while life isn't all about beer, you know, beer is all about life. And we try to blog about, you know, the experience of beer. We don't call ourselves experts. We know what we like and what we don't like, and your opinion may be different, and that's okay. So come on in and join the conversation.
I'd like to thank you all again for being here. Again, that was Al Everett from hoptalk.com, Ron Namath, also from hoptalk.com, Alan Wright from beerbloggersconference.com, and the first Beer Bloggers Conference is going to be November 5th through 7th, 2010. Thank you all again for being here. I really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's edition of the Beersmith Show. If you have comments on how to improve the show, you could leave them at the bottom of the blog post associated with this show, or go to our discussion forum at beersmith.com/forum. I hope you have a fantastic homebrewing week.